This is a meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission on Monday, November 19th, 2012, at 7 p.m. Roll call, please.
Diane Dichter.
Luke Nelson.
Andrew Mulligan.
Carl Craft.
Stan Kraus. The item 2.0, public hearing, 2.1, public comments and or questions concerning the preliminary recommendation of the Planning and Zoning Commission amending of residential garage requirements for houses elevated on piers. We'll do that first, right?
Yes, and you can give the time and declare it open and take testimony.
Okay, so we'll start the public hearing now at 7:07. If you'd like to make a comment, please come to the lectern, state your name and address, and comment.
Jared Victor, 3346 Miramar. I looked over the proposed ordinance change, and I agree with the part that gives the prospective builder or owner of the property the option to, of course, as it stands right now, he doesn't have an option whether it is he or she. They have to have a garage. That's it. So this gives them the option of having an enclosure called an opaque enclosure under the garage. And I'm for that. One of the issues, if you're like I am in the next to the water, that high hazard zone, VE zone, if in my setup, I've got a house that's elevated above the floodplain, and the garage that's below it, that's on ground level. Now, they're separated. I've got two separate flood insurance policies. One for $2,400 for the house, and one is $450 per garage. Now, if I were to join those together and have the garage attached to the house, my premium would jump up to $6,000 a year. So, or even, this is an option that I discussed with an insurance agent a couple years ago. If we just run a breezeway attachment from the house to the garage that's fixed, then they would assess my flood insurance policy based on the garage, the lowest level. So I would still pay $6,000 in insurance premium. And that's going to go up because of Hurricane Sandy. We found out it's probably going to bump up 10 or 20% next go round. Now looking at it from, now you're all residents here, you probably have your neighbors in place, and you know everything that's going to be built here is going to have to be elevated. So if I'm an outsider looking for a place to live, and I go to Clear Lake Shores, I go to Seabrook, go to Kima, there's no big garage ordinances. You don't even need a garage, okay? Let alone if you have an elevated, if you want to put an enclosure underneath, you meet the floodplain requirement or flood insurance requirements, which you have a breakaway enclosure. If you want to put the slatted enclosure, like for privacy, you do it. If you come to Shore Acres, you got the garage ordinance. You got to deal with that. That's going to cost you, I don't know, another $20,000, $30,000. And then also, this ordinance talks about having a concrete slab under the house, elevated house and piles, which is pretty much mandatory if you're going to park cars up there. But looking at prospective buyer coming in, is he gonna, or he or she, gonna look at the option and say, well, I'll just move to Cleveland or Seabrook. I don't have to worry. I can do what I want. If I want a garage, I can do it. If I want an enclosure, I can do it. If he can do what he wants, he or she. So getting back to where we're at. The ordinance right now says you have to have a garage, and I think any prospective buyer should be offered the option in lieu of putting the garage up, put this enclosure with the opaque walls, I guess those are slatted walls. And that's all I have to say, and that's what I recommend, that you pass that ordinance with that enclosure or garage as an alternate.
Thank you, Jerry.
Any questions?
Any other comments from any other? Is the mayor just regular?
She isn't tonight.
I'm just listening.
Okay. Well, there being no other citizens present, we'll close the comment period. And at 7:12, the next item is 3.0, which is business. 3.1, consideration, discussion, and action to adopt a report and recommendation to City Council regarding the amendment of residential garage requirements for houses elevated on piers. So, there being no changes to the ordinance as planning and zoning put forward, and there being no adverse comments from the audience, I'll entertain any discussion or a motion to move forward with the changed ordinance.
I have a question. And maybe David, you can answer this as our manager, right? If they do opaque walls, does their insurance still go up?
Yes, there is a degree of lattice work that is permitted in the National Flood Insurance Program that is not counted as an enclosure. The threshold is 300 square feet. You get enclosed up to 300 square feet for access. The intent is for access upstairs, so you could have like an entryway. If you go over the 300 square feet, there's a penalty. They do allow you to use lattice work screening to screen from view in an area that is screened in. We would call it an enclosure,
sure.
But under that particular regulation would not be. It's different than a breakaway wall. It's different than the other types of flood wall things. It's just a screening. And slat work or lattice work is acceptable without it being an enclosure for flood purposes.
And it can be over the 300, or is that 300 square foot still the threshold?
No, there's no limit on that area.
Okay, so essentially that does not penalize somebody having what we proposed for walls, opaque walls.
Correct. And if I could, Mr. Chairman, let me clarify on the ordinance that's here, I'd be happy to do that. And we have a couple members that were present for the discussion last time.
Oh, well, that's true. Okay.
There was debate and discussion here with the commission on all the various issues, and the report and order that I put in your packet is the direction that I received from the Planning and Zoning Commission, which is pretty brief after an hour and a half of discussion in the recommendations portion there, that it be modified to limit the exception to fully enclosed. You know, we had an ordinance that you saw that was drafted by the city attorney, and when you apply that ordinance directly, it gave a blanket exemption to the other requirements for garage. And so the direction that I had was that it not give a blanket, but that it just address the enclosure requirements. So this would still require you to have the 484 square feet, two-car capacity, screened, and we would count that as a fully enclosed garage under the ordinance. And so then the other was that the two sides be fixed not temporary or movable. There was discussion of having the ice house effect where you put a garage door or a screening or a curtain or a roll up on all four sides, and then it's for purposes of passing muster and getting a permit, and then you roll it up or you take it off or you do it in such a manner then that it's not screened at all. So that was intended to help address that. And then the 80% of each side opaque was so that someone didn't aggregate and put in, for example, a solid back wall and make one solid side wall, and then the other walls would only be, say, 40% or 60%, 40% opaque, so you really can look right in. And so it was per wall. Taking that information, I drafted the ordinance. It's also in your packet. Using the city attorney's ordinance as the starting point, and this, I believe, addresses those concerns and issues that were asked to be modified by the Planning and Zoning Commission. And so that's what you have before you.
It's considered essentially the use of a two-car garage, right? And so they'll still have to have garage doors. Is that correct?
They would still have to have some enclosure. This doesn't speak directly to that. So, for example, variance was given to the Austins on Forest, and they, in essence, have gates as opposed to doors. So it would allow you to have barn doors, gates, overhead doors, some type of screening, though, that would provide you with the 80% screening all the way around. And it could be a conventional garage door, or it could be something else that's 80% opaque.
Okay, and as long as they can get an engineer for wind scoring purposes as well, because we're in an area where you have both flood and wind storm.
Right.
Now, what we're allowing people to do if they're not breaking away walls and they're 80% opaque, is that still going to pass for wind?
They'll still have to meet all of those other requirements. There's nothing the city can do to waive the windstorm requirement.
Okay.
So we're not waiving any of that. And there are still different zones. Mr. Victor testified he's in a VE zone, right, which has the highest standard. And, you know, the concrete system that goes under a structure in a VE zone has to either be engineered for storm surge or it has to be fragable. It has to break up. If you're in an AE zone, you don't have that requirement. You can just have a conventional slab. So there are going to be other requirements that this doesn't address. You'll still have to meet those requirements for flood and windstorm by whatever zone and location it's in.
Okay.
Also, and you bring that point up, anything that's below the minimum base flood elevation or the design elevation, which is 1 foot above the floodplain base elevation by the FEMA firm map, has to be constructed out of flood-resistant material. So the screening and such beneath that level will have to be a material that meets the FEMA requirements for being flood resistant. Just like if you built a conventional garage, to whatever point you get to that, it has to be flood resistant material, which, you know, is pressure treated wood or masonry block, or there's a whole list of things that are.
Okay.
Okay.
And they can easily access that, so when they're doing design, they can know what materials they can deal with.
Yes, that's on our website, the building information.
More questions, that's about it. Just, as long as, you know, our citizens also know that, you know, it's not just blood, it's windstorm you've got to contend with as well. So, and it may be a gray area for some people not knowing that.
Can we have a question?
Quick question. It might be covered previous to this, back to the old section, but they must be able to get a vehicle into the enclosure?
Yes, actually that was one of the purposes of changing it to only modify the enclosure requirement and let the rest stand.
Okay.
Because you may recall out of that discussion, the way the ordinance was originally written, you would not necessarily be able to get two vehicles in,
right,
or meet the square footage. What this does is just says that the enclosure requirement is accepted in an elevated house if you do these things.
Okay, but they must have some way.
They still have to, yeah. They still have to have a driveway. They still have to have the ability to put two cars in it. You know, specifically, though, we did not address and we had that discussion. The cars can go one in front of the other or side by side, or, you know, that's still, as it is today, not pinned down.
And that's funny, because when we're doing some over there,
Yeah. One of the concerns that was driving this was that if you put the piers in on like 7 foot centers, you wouldn't be able to get a vehicle in there, even if you enclosed 1,000 square feet. You know, so it wouldn't be fair to call that a garage and not be able to get a vehicle in.
Any more questions? If not, I'll call for a motion to approve ordinance as amended.
I'll make a motion to adopt the report and recommendation regarding the amendment of residential garage requirements for houses on elevated piers.
Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Next item is adjournment. I told my wife it should be short, but I didn't promise. I've been fooled before.
I was going to ask David.
Yes.
Good for me, isn't it?